This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Monk and Roshan Gunnison. It's 6 o'clock a.m. 6 o'clock a.m.? 6 a.m. Yes. Or it, 6 o'clock in the morning?
It is in fact 6 o'clock a.m.
I kind of just got confused, you know. I was trying to say one and then I decided, no, I'll say the other. And then I said both by accident. It doesn't make sense. What can you do? Thursday, 2nd of July today. How are you doing, Roshan?
Well, I'm doing a little better right now because breaking news, Arsenal won 4-0 over Norwich City, taking us into an amazing 7th place. Now, in case you can't get that sarcasm there, it is really bad. 7th place is bad, considering...
7th place out of how many?
20. Well, it just means okay, that it's really
not
tough.
So bad, la.
No. Anything outside of top 4 is bad. And anything beyond top 6 is really bad for Arsenal. The season's pretty much over. Liverpool has won. Now everyone's just fighting for 2nd, 3rd and 4th because that gets you into the Champions League. So exciting times ahead. I think the only consolation is Chelsea lost to West Ham 3-2.
Super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you look super excited about this.
I'm sure I am, absolutely.
This is riveting information at 6 a.m. in the morning.
But do you know what else I am excited about? I'm excited about our lineup today. So later on, after the 6:30 news, what are we going to be talking about?
6:30, we take a look at the globe. And when we talk about the globe, what we really mean is we take a look at the U.S. and China and their ongoing developments.
Because that's the globe, right?
That's the globe. I mean, one side you got U.S., one side China, the two superpowers that pretty much define everything and everything. I said the same word twice. Right now, we'll be taking a look at the surging cases in the US and as well as the Hong Kong security laws that have really come into effect in Hong Kong. They're sending more chills down on many people's spines.
All right. And if you want to weigh in on our conversations this morning, remember you can WhatsApp us 01878898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're asking the question of, is campus life worth paying for? So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was U2 with I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, for a lot of people, you know, who when they haven't found what they're looking for, it's usually about the time when they're in university. You know, you're trying to find yourself and find your purpose in life. The question is now, when you are in this age of a global pandemic, you know, that uncertainty is magnified threefold. So, you know, we've had reports that students are going to be going back to school very soon, but the question is whether that physical presence on campuses and on school grounds, whether it's worth the risk, even though an education is definitely worth it.
Yeah, I think it's undoubtedly a fact right now, right, that university and college is essential in order to get you to the next level, in order to improve your earning capacity. In fact, now it sometimes feels like a prerequisite because there's nothing...
that impacts the way you work and live more.
There's nothing that impacts the way you work and live more. Exactly, Lynn. I know, see, you're getting it. But it's the... There's the education side and then mm-hmm. there's the experience side, right? So you go on campus, you mingle with different people, you are interacting with others. Now that's the human element of education. But how much should you be paying for it? That's a big question there.
Yeah.
Because especially if like you're not so tied in with your community in your neighborhood, this is how kids are learning how to interact with others through school and then in college. I know that so I studied in Malaysia, but my siblings went overseas and the exposure they got from being overseas was incredible. I'm a bit envious in case you couldn't tell, but it is it's definitely something that teaches you about the world. And when you're in your own country, and I think this is why we also criticize the US for being so within its own self, right? Because at the end of the day, who from the US goes overseas to study? Very few of them. All the best colleges are there, a lot of them anyway. So they only know what is the globe is defined by what they know, which is all within their country.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was the kind of kid that I went to university and it was a little bit like an angel choir sang, right? Because I understood for the first time what independence meant. It meant, you know, living in a dormitory and having to learn how to do laundry, having to learn how to cook something beyond like eggs in a microwave. And that kind of experience does set you up for the rest of your life, really, because it is the community, but it is also the impact of having to fend for yourself for a lot of students for the first time ever, because you know you're coming from if you're coming from a high high school life, most students, the majority, vast majority of students still live with their parents at that time. And while you have, while you can have a variety of responsibilities within the home, when you live with your family, it's different than when you move out and live in a dorm with 300 other students your own age. So with this, with e-learning now coming up strong as an issue, as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, there have been questions raised, you see them bandied about every once in a while, of whether universities should lower their fees if they are only communicating their education through an online platform, right? Because these students are not physically present to take advantage of the sports halls or the badminton courts or the, you know, or the gyms that are usually also present somewhere on campus. So, you know, it kind of just raises the question of what exactly are you paying for when you go to a university?
Yeah, are you paying for the overall experience? Are you paying for the education? Everything else is just kind of like a value add. And then that's how they get away with and basically saying, you know, we're still providing you the same education, right? And they still get the same cert, which is what you're paying for. But it's just that at this point in time, you can't come to campus. I am torn about this because most universities do emphasize the campus because it's part of their it is part of their allure, right? You're pulling people in through this because, oh, you're competing with a lot of other campuses around the world, not just within your own country, right? It's a globalized world, and everyone is looking towards where they can get the best education. And for Malaysian parents, actually, this is a big deal. It's very important that that in their minds, it's very, you know, when I speak to some of these financial planners on Ringgit and Sense, education planning is a huge plan for most parents, and sometimes it can come at the cost of retirement for them.
Yeah, that's a very unfortunate side effect of this. You know, I've also had a number of conversations about education and higher education on the Breakfast Grill. And an interesting thing that came out of those conversations was how we view online learning. Because it used to be that, when you thought of learning online, you thought of kind of second tier or third tier universities, maybe that don't really have the option of bringing in large numbers of students because maybe they don't have the physical facilities, so they move online, right? And the association with online universities was not always very good because why would you study at an online university if, say, you could be at a physical university even if you were only studying part time, but with more universities now of, you know, Ivy League tier, but also just generally good private and public universities now with no choice but to upskill their entire departments and, you know, force people to go online, how is that going to change the associations surrounding online learning? I think the association of online learning as second class will maybe start to erode. But it's the question is whether or not that will come at the expense of fees.
It's also what's culturally acceptable, right? If you are comfortable learning online, I know friends who have been doing it. MDEX has partnered up with Coursera to basically roll out programs for all those who are unemployed. If you're unemployed, you can go on Coursera. There are 3,800 courses for you to take a look at. So there is a lot of learning being done. And when you have online CVs like LinkedIn, you can put these certs there. So maybe this is the way you get your edge today. But it's about whether it's culturally acceptable. There's so many things still in play. And we're not going to know the answer this year or next. It's going to take a few years for this to settle down.
It's going to even maybe take a generation or two. But do let us know what you think about this. Nevertheless, is campus life worth paying for? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some messages coming up for you, and then we're going to be continuing the conversation about learning. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. That was Weezer with Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And I love the fact that this song title followed our conversation about universities because, you know, who doesn't go to university without aspirations for world domination?
Nobody. Nobody goes to university without the aspiration
wants to rule the world.
But you know what's another great step in that journey to ruling the world? Lots of reading. Lots and lots of reading.
You the secret learn. Of world domination is in books?
It is. You know, that's where you get the knowledge. You got to read Caesar. You got to read Marcus Aurelius. You got to get the knowledge from all these individuals.
I'm rolling my eyes at you right now, by the way, Roshan.
To give you the tools of titans. Yeah, I know. That was a lot of cliche in 30 seconds there.
Yeah, but we are talking about books this morning because there's an article that was highlighted to us in The Guardian. I mean, and it's from a little while ago. I mean, I think it was in conjunction with World Book Day, which is in March. But it's still an interesting conversation and one that's cropping up again because while everybody's been stuck at home for the most part, you know, if you and your partner are at home and you've got children in the house as well, children who are not in school, although they will likely be in school, you know, in a few weeks' time. The chances are that screen time has been increased in order to kind of just generally cope with the madness. And you know, this is not something that's to be embarrassed of. It happens. It's the reality. If you're working from home, you need half an hour of peace and quiet to focus on whatever project it is you have on your plate. Sometimes giving a child a screen is a good way to get that peace and quiet. But you know, in this age of smartphones and tablets, how do you actually get children to pick up a book?
I don't know. I think this is a tough challenge because anything with a screen is way more engaging than a book, right? The book's engagement comes from you having to spend time with it and reading it and kind of making your brain work. So on that level, I completely agree that reading is better for the development of a brain, right? In the sense that you have to create the story. You have to create the picture in your head. Sorry, you're not creating the story. You're reading the story. You're interpreting it in your own way. You are being exposed to different kinds of themes and different words that you won't normally use because TV is very geared and mass media is very geared to use the most relatable terms. Whereas books don't necessarily do that. And also, books are a medium that allow to explore way more complex dynamics, right? A simple comparison is Game of Thrones TV show versus Game of Thrones the books. Five books that spanned, still not complete, by the way. He's still got two books to write. He still hasn't got it done. We're all very angry at George R. R. Martin. But, you know, the books explore much deeper themes and much deeper character psyche that kind of gives you different perspectives. You can't really do that with a TV show. Unless you've got a narrator going through it, which very few TV shows do, you're not really going, you know, don't have really an understanding of what the character is up to as well.
Books have a built-in expositionary tool, basically, is what
they do. Big word, Lin-Mark, big word.
I was a bookworm too. I was a massive bookworm. So this article is quite cute. It's written by a mother who has seen these bookworm tendencies emerge in her daughter. And she talks about, you know, how the daughter reads everywhere, in the bathtub, walking, you know, she's walked into a lamppost while walking along the pavement because she had a nose in the book. And I was that kid. I read everywhere.
Books are dangerous.
Yes, probably dangerous to your safety when they're used like this. But they're also a weapon, by the way. I mean, have you ever seen a Victor Hugo book?
I'm just worried that you pointed that out, that they're a weapon. Everyone, please
just
keep
shows where my
away.
Brain went. It was part of how it was fostered in me was that my mother refused to let me read comics. Okay, because part of the...
Hey, but comics are books too.
So at least her initial reasoning for it, which she did communicate to me at like 9 years old, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, that makes sense, was that comics kind of give you the image, right? You don't have to challenge your imagination as much as if you are presented with essentially a wall of text. And that's what TV shows and videos do as well. They just present it to you and you kind of sit there and consume. Whereas a lot of books, I do feel, they challenge you to kind of think about what you're reading. It immerses you a lot more, in my experience.
Yeah, I mean, before the Harry Potter movies came out, right, everyone who read it had different images of what those characters look like. Everyone had a different interpretation of what Hagrid looked like or what Harry looked like or what Hermione looked like. But when the movies came out, and if you read the books after, it's very hard to separate the image of Harry Potter from Daniel Radcliffe. That's already solidified. It's given to you. It's been ingrained in society. Mm-hmm. Before that, you had to develop that image in your head. And you had to use the clues in the books. And I mean, I'm not here to diss digital technology. I'm a big fan of YouTube and consuming information there. But there's a difference between essentially consumption of information and learning how to develop your brain, learning how to think and learning how to interpret data. That's, I think, something that we're losing as we continuously just spoon feed people information.
Yeah, and I mean, so we've been talking so far about fiction, right? But there's also the non-fiction element to it. I mean, yes, you know, your child is not going to read about like personal finance and how people get rich and Ramit Sethi and you okay, well, you're strange.
But, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
How old were you when you read that?
Okay, I was like 11.
Okay, I was not expecting that. But still, you know, for me, it was encyclopedias. And I loved encyclopedias. I had kids' encyclopedias. And that was how I also learned about things like sloths and the fact that, you know, sloths move so slowly that algae grows on them. It was funny facts like that that drew my attention as a child and nevertheless imparted me with a lot of information that clearly has stuck until today.
So Lynn, how important has been learning about sloths to your life?
Vastly, vastly important.
Another word you picked up from the dictionary?
Absolutely. You know, I remember asking a question about sloths in a birthday quiz when I was 11. So, you know, clearly the information is still somewhere in my brain.
Well done, encyclopedias.
However many years later. But do let us know what you think. How do we encourage a reading habit in this age of digital media? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up. Up next, and to take you there, here is Viva La Vida by Coldplay, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Gone with the Wind Is My Love by Rita and the Tiaras, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanison. Now, we're taking a look at some international stories now, right on top of the list is an update from the United States, where some of its states have actually started halting their reopenings and indoor dining as they saw a surge in coronavirus cases. I think the U.S. Has seen record numbers of cases at this point. And I mean, they've also been in the news because of the remdesivir drug. So there have been accusations that the U.S. is hoarding supply of the drug.
Oh, I mean, it's a huge victory for Trump's administration, right, to basically buy that up. But, you know, I was reading something from BBC yesterday about Dr. Anthony Fauci. I mean, we were talking a lot about him at the start, and then he kind of just disappeared off, at least in terms of the media coverage. But he was talking about how, based on this, and how they're, in quotes, clearly we're not in control right now, end quote, mm-hmm. that he sees the country reaching 100,000 cases per day. Now, that is not flattening the curve. Actually, you know, it's flattening the curve, but vertically. It's not what you want. You know, it's the wrong way. And it's become a bit scary just considering the fact that how big that country is and how, generally speaking, America is, whether we like it or not, very important for the global economy, global trade, global commerce. I don't know how this is going to play out for them, especially because of it's the way the country is built, right? It's 50 mm-hmm. states doing their own thing, essentially, run by the governors with guidance and some intervention from the federal government. But there's just no real leadership right now.
Yeah, and that's probably going to come back to bite Donald Trump by the time he has to face the public in the polls in November. But I mean, coming back to this vaccine, right, we did see kind of sort of nationalistic, almost protectionist calls, even coming from France when Sanofi was talking about a potential vaccine as well. I think Emmanuel Macron came out to say that, hey, you know, you're a French company, you should be prioritizing the French people. And it's raised a lot of questions about who's going to get this vaccine, you know, first, right? So remdesivir currently is the only drug that is licensed by both the US and the EU for anyone with severe illness, suffering from a severe case of the coronavirus. And the fact that the US has bought it all up really just kind of goes to show the fact that, you know, even in a public health emergency, in a global pandemic, money calls the shots.
I mean, end of the day, the companies are private companies, right? And the problem is that we haven't, no country is treating this like, I mean, you know, in the early days when we were talking about this, we had politicians and leaders talking about how this was basically a war, but with an enemy we can't see. But during the old wars, World War I, World War II, companies got involved in the manufacturing. It things not nationalized, but you know, they got involved in building tanks, building equipment, whether it was GM, they stopped building what they were supposed to build, and they contributed towards the effort. Here, it's still business as usual for most things, right? And you know, when you talk about like Sanofi in France, for example, France is now looking at Sanofi as, oh, you're a French company. But then if you look at this, does Sanofi really make all its money from France? What defines a country, right? A company's origin, is it, or what type of nationality does a company have? In today's globalized economy, do companies have any nationalities? I mean, aside the Chinese state-owned corporations and our own, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, China is an entirely separate issue, right? But yeah, I mean, it does raise the question of companies have always profited in times of uncertainty, you know, when and war and pandemics, I guess, have always fostered great technological development. Because if you think about World War II, and that happened in the 1940s, if you think about the war before World War I, which happened in the late 1800s, and you look at how the terrain of battle shifted. In the late 1800s, battles were still being fought by ship on sea. In 1940s, it was an aerial war. So it just kind of goes to show that, you know, who came out of that who came out of that the best? The people who were manufacturing the planes, no doubt, and the people who were manufacturing the tanks and the artillery that went into the massive amounts of fighting. So it's a terrible kind of situation, but this is the reality, right? And we're actually going to be talking a little bit more about this, whether or not vaccines are a human right, later on after the 7:30 news. And we're going to be speaking with Dr. Kosui King, a physician at the Health Systems and Policies Specialist. So be sure to stay tuned for that. If not, you can find the podcast later today on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. But, you know, speaking of China, China's also come out with there's been some news out of China and Hong Kong, specifically that the Hong Kong security law is now sending chills down everyone's spines because it's been passed.
Yeah, 10 people were accused of violating the law, including a man with a pro-independence flag. About 360 others were detained at a banned rally. And really, this has got a lot of people thinking about their freedoms at this point in Hong Kong, things that they enjoyed just a week ago or so. And, you know, people are deleting their social media presence, their app. They're not sure about what they're allowed to say that doesn't violate the law, because if it violates the law, they can be thrown in prison for that.
You're going to disappear into a black hole and never come out, like, basically.
Not as bad, like, this one, you get thrown in prison, not a deep black hole in the middle of nowhere.
But are you ever going to come back out?
I don't have the answer to that question. I don't think anyone has the answer. Maybe Xi Jinping. That's about it. I think he's the only one with the answer to that question.
Yeah. It's a serious
it's really sad, actually, if you think about it. Yeah. Because, again, you know, Hong Kong was that beacon of a financial center. That the fact that they could do the protest last year, in spite of the resistance from China, it showed that they had some independence. But yeah. I mean, this highlights and confirms the US's concerns over the future of Hong Kong in a lot of ways.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the handover, incidentally, in Hong Kong, which is usually marked by a massive protest, because Hong Kong does have that protest culture. But just look where it is today. But right now, we have some messages for you. And then up next, we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers. So be sure to keep it here. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Prince with Raspberry Beret, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Roshan Kanisen. 6:51 a.m, Thursday the 2nd of July, and we're taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers this morning. And I have the New Straits Times as well as the Sina Harian in front of me, and their front page is about the same thing. The fact that schools are going to be ready to start and are going to be open fully starting the 15th of July.
I mean, that's the same thing on the Star right now, Together But Apart. Oh no, it's actually the headline just
Together But Apart.
Together Apart. Together, comma, apart. schools from Form 1 to Form 4 will start July 15, Year 1 to Year 4, mm-hmm. July 22, with the appropriate SOPs that they've been proposing. There are three models right now that they're thinking about. And essentially, this is just the next step in getting things on the way back to normal. I mean, yesterday we saw most businesses, I think, have opened right now, or if not all, with the appropriate SOPs. I think the one I was paying attention to is the fact that cinemas are almost there. And I'm just
happy to go and watch your next Marvel movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I don't know when that's going to come out. I think that's probably Black Widow. I think the Eternals have been pushed next year. But we'll have to see. I mean, I'll have to see. But, you know, I have friends overseas who are watching old, that the cinemas are showing older movies. They're showing things like Inception and Interstellar because the Christopher Nolan's movies, Tenet, is supposed to be coming out. So they're kind of just getting in the Nolan mood of things. I know that's on the actually page 3 of the Star, that cinema goes rejoice at being able to go back despite stricter measures. I don't mind going to the cinema alone to watch a movie. I have no problems with that.
So the NST, if you open it up, it's second and third page and fourth page and fifth page and sixth page are all about children and education and schools. And interesting, you know, the NUTP, which is on page 4, there's a little article here. NUTP is calling, urging the Education Ministry to try and conduct more engagement sessions with teachers to ensure that some of the problems of teaching ahead of the school reopen are addressed. And I mean, it is going to be a very different situation, right? There are some pictures scattered through the paper of small classrooms. Everyone's wearing masks. There are teachers in PPE equipment, and I can imagine it might be actually kind of scary to be going back to school and these kind of to be dipping in and out of crowded classrooms.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, on top of that, these are just kids, right? I mean, I remember when the haze was really bad. I was 7 years old, going to school then. We had all we had to do back then was wear a mask, and I was already worried about that. Now, this is a situation where they got away with people. I mean, I was 7 years old, okay? Lynn, don't give me that look.
Wait, what were you worried about exactly?
Oh, no, just like it was scary to go out into the world.
Okay.
Because everyone kept talking about how bad the haze is, or is it ever going to get better? Now, you're a kid going into the same narrative, and now people are wearing PPE. Like, I can't imagine how scary that must be.
So I was the other kind of child that just ignored the rules on masks because I was like, it'll be fine. So, you know, that attitude is also quite scary when you think about it because...
Very scary.
Yeah, children may not necessarily, on the flip side, may not necessarily see the importance of wearing face masks and practicing, you know, practicing extra personal hygiene measures. Certainly some adults don't.
Yeah, but on the more positive side, the Malaysia recorded zero local transmissions for the first time since March. Positive, again, heading towards that even more flattening of the curve. But on that note, actually there's an editorial here on the Malaysian Reserve page. I can't find the page number, but essentially it's remain vigilant, Malaysians. And the idea here is basically don't get complacent at this point. You know, just because things are looking better, feel better for some, and maybe in your area things are looking better, don't get complacent, abide by the SOPs, and let's just keep this going together. Because end of the day, if we want the if we want things to eventually get back together, get back to normal, this has to really go. Because right now we don't have a vaccine. If it has a surge, I mean, look at the US and how complacent they've been with their own. Even if you take it on a state level, don't even look at it from a federal level, look at a state level. New York has done a great job at managing the crisis there. Other states haven't done as good of a job, and they got complacent. They opened early. They didn't have proper SOPs. People didn't listen. I'm not here to say that everything you should be listening to everything, but this is common sense here. We have to work together. This is kita jaga kita, really.
Yeah, but the problem is that common sense isn't that common, right? And then in a lot of places, the US particularly, wearing a mask has somehow become a political symbol.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole frustrating, different frustrating set of events.
Yeah. It's not a political symbol. It is a public health need. Right at this point, because nobody wants to be struck down with this coronavirus. You don't want to, even worse, you don't want to be spreading it to friends and family who may not necessarily have the immune system to fight off this virus.
Yeah, and as we end, actually, we had one more WhatsApp message come in from Ro, who enjoyed my football update at the start, even though he's a Spurs fan. And for those who don't have context, Arsenal fans and Spurs fans aren't supposed to get along. he wasn't as pleased with the cover of Everyone Wants to Rule the World, but I think that's maybe just from an idea standpoint. But Ro, just for you, again, once again, the football scores. Arsenal won 4-0 over Norwich. Bournemouth lost 1-4 to Newcastle. Everton won 2-1 to Leicester. And West Ham beat Chelsea 3-2.
And on the back of that vital piece of news, we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, we're bringing you the business news and analysis of the serious side of the Morning Run. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news. But first, here is Can't Stand Losing You by The Police, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.